Good morning, everybody. Today we're going to learn a shtickle about Parshas Tazria Metzora. Parshas Tazria, just the very name tells us something very important, because when you think about Tazria Metzora, we immediately associate Tazria with Tzaras and all kinds of afflictions and tragedies that happen. But yet, the very word Tazria doesn't mean that. What does the word Tazria mean? It's referencing the rebirth and seeding and planting and seemingly good things. Zera, to take seed and to take root. And especially in the very beginning of the parasha, we're talking about a child that was born. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to apparently darshan very often the name of the parasha, that it had tremendous significance, discussing things that we would always discuss the name of the parasha, and the name of the parasha would have tremendous significance. So the question here is, what's the deal with the name Tazria of the Parsha? If the Parsha is filled with tzaras and afflictions and negativity, it would think that it would give it the name Mitzora, as in Tazria Mitzora, so call it Mitzora, Mitzora, whatever it is. But why is this week's Parsha called Tazria? So, my good friend, I forget his Hebrew name now, but I knew him, is Roy Ashkenazi. He gave me the Sefer a number of years ago. I've used it a couple of times. He writes very beautifully about this particular week's Parsha. We think when somebody loves us, right, at an immature age, we'll think if somebody loves us, that means they're always going to give us something, right? If you know, I have children, and sometimes they'll ask me for the latest gadgets, and I'll say no. And the reason why I say no is because I think I know it's in their best interest, and God gave me them as a pikadon. But they're going to say, the reason why I didn't get the latest zach was because, Daddy, you don't really love me. And if you really loved me, you would give me. But that's a very immature way of thinking. And we know that we are, of course, our banim latem l'Hashem l'Ochechem. We are banim, we are the sons. And this relationship between us and the Kodesh Baruch Hu replicates very much the relationship that you have with your parents, or that I have with my children, or my parents. So he gives the following mashal on this pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And through this mashal, we'll be able to understand a lot more. The pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Yonasi bechagve hasela b'seisa madrega, hir enis marayich ishmeres kolach ki kolach arev umarev nav. I touched it up. Oh, my dove in the cranny of the rocks, or we call the cleft, hidden by the cliff. Let's see your face. Let's hear your voice. For your voice, sweet. You're stuck somewhere, but I want to hear your voice. So there's a calling out. There's a longing for something that is hidden. So the Medrash explains this pasuk in the following fashion. It says the following. There was a king. There's always a king in the Medrash, right? In the Mashal, he's going to declare something. And what is the king? And what does the king want? The king wants to see his child. And the child has not reacted at all. The child does not react to the king. So what does he do? He says, everyone should go to this auditorium. The king wants to meet with everybody. And of course, his daughter is going to come as well. But when he leaves, what does he do? He tells one of his slaves, go and pretend you're a marauder. Go and pretend you're a robber. And immediately grab my daughter. What's she going to do when she gets grabbed? She's going to start yelling, Abba, Abba, Tati, Hatsileni, save me. Oh, so this is what the father's yearning to hear. The father is yearning to hear this Abba Hatsileni. So too when Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim. So the Mitzrayim were mishabed us, they were torturing us, so then we cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We got out of Egypt immediately, so we started going on our own. What happened next? So then the Mitzrayim almost killed us again by Kriyas Yamsuf. Once again, there was this cry. Says the Medrash, Yonasi b'chag v'asela hashmieni es kolecha. My dove who's between the cleft of the rock, I want to hear your voice. Meaning, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do when he wants to hear our voice? Just like the king gave a little bit of suffering to his daughter, in order for the king to hear the daughter's voice once again, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes afflicts us with a shtickle of yisurim, of some afflictions, so that we should cry out to him. Meaning the suffering is not an end in and of itself, and it doesn't take away from our relationship. If anything, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hoping very much is that that suffering will create the relationship between us and him, so that we would return to him. This is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains is going on in Parashas Tazria Mitzora. Tazria. Why is it called Tazria when we're talking about the Mitzora? Because the goal is not just for a Mitzora. That's not the goal, that you should be punished for speaking Lashon Hara. That's a means to an end. If we just focus on that, then we're lost. The question becomes is that when we develop the Mitzorah, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from us? Does he want us just to sit in pain? No, he wants us to do introspection. Think about the Lashon Hara that we spoke. Think about the distance that we've strayed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In order that, we should return. To take meaning in the suffering. Just to have suffering in and of itself, we're toast. There has to be a depth and a yearning from the suffering. Because if there's just suffering alone, that's a waste of everybody's time. And you'll lead it. That'll lead to depression. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Sacks writes in his book about Iyov. He writes that the final chapter, Iyov is proven to be right. And some people question as to whether or not that really is correct. It sounds like it's a later edition. But at the end, Iyov is deemed correct by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he has seven children, seven sons, three daughters, and he lives, so to speak, not happily ever after, but he lives with happiness. And the question everyone bothers, what happened at the end? So God is explaining, so the way Rabbi Sacks explains, I'll just read to you quickly from what he writes. He essentially writes that what Eo finally comprehends at the very end of the suffering, at the very end, is that we don't necessarily come to a grip as to why there is suffering in terms of the reason that it was given to us, but the reaction to suffering is what's key, and that we have to keep plugging away, and that we have to keep moving on. And that's why Eov wins, so to speak, because he relives his life, and he gets remarried, and he develops children. He takes the suffering with him and makes it part of him. That's what greatness is. Greatness is not about suffering and feeling the suffering and just feeling the pain and but rather to take that lesson of suffering and to utilize it, letov. I got to read this story of Yitzchak Perlman. My mother's maiden name is Perlman. I don't believe I'm related to Yitzchak Perlman. But there was an Israeli violinist, Yitzchak Perlman. He contracted the age of polio at the age of 4 years old. Right? So he always had to wear metal braces because with crutches. But he became one of the great composers of all time. So one time he came out on a concert to play the violin. Right? So he laid down his crutches, he put the violin on his chin and got ready to play. But when he started to play, one of the strings snapped. Bam, just like that. So they were expecting him to pull out another violin. I guess it's like a baseball player, right? You know, you break your bat and they go and they get him another bat. I suppose, again, I don't know anything about concerts. I'm speaking way out of my, you know, comfort zone. But I would assume, like, you know, when the material is not there, you call the bullpen, you got another one in shine. But what does he do? They expected that to happen, but instead he said to the conductor, Viter, let's go. Let's play. So he played the entire concert on three strings. When I read that, I'm like, a violin has four strings. Who knew? But anyway, he played the entire concert on three strings. You knew this? Anyway, at the end of the performance, he was apparently amazing. And the audience gives him a standing ovation. Right? If there's such a thing at a concert, I guess he was really good. You know, it was like he struck a guy out with the bases loaded. Okay. But then what happened was, at the very end, he says, it goes on, and he gets up and he gives a drasha in front of the oilam, right? So what does Yitzchak Perlman say? He goes, our task is to make music with what remains. Drop the mic. Our task is to make music with what remains. Everybody in life has a pekalach. Something that has happened to them that, zelo fair, right? We all have something. Baruch Hashem, I had my zach, you know. And it wasn't such a big deal. It was like, you know, as my wife says, as soon as it happened, I knew everything would be okay, bones heal, right? But everybody has moments of suffering where things don't go the way they planned. So you could ask, I always say this, you could always ask, why does this happen to me, and complain? Or you could ask, why does this happen to me? What unique idea happened to me from the suffering that I'm supposed to draw out from my inner kochos and share it with the world? Why does this happen to me? Meaning the same question you're asking, but you ask with a negative spin is, why does it happen to me? Or, why does this happen to me? And utilize this for good. You know, Viktor Frankl, you know, Rabbi Sacks quotes Viktor Frankl very often in his books. And Viktor Frankl speaks about, you know, the case for a meaningful life and a meaningful existence. And he speaks about the people who were able to survive the Holocaust. And who was able to survive the Holocaust? We just had Yom HaShoah this week. There were two kinds of people. The people who went through the Holocaust and they didn't understand why they were suffering. You know what happened to those people? They didn't make it. There was immediate, not immediate, but what happened was after a while, they gave up hope and they died. But the people who understood that there was a reason for their suffering and that they needed to come out the other end to become better, those people were the ones who were able to survive. We just had Yom HaShoah this week. Those people, the survivors, who all had meaning in their lives. And they took, like Viktor Frankl, what was his meaning? He wanted his life's work to be known by the world. Something called logotherapy, which logotherapy is the kind of therapy that very often people use today, which is making sense of the suffering. Figuring out what is your meaning in life. So Viktor Frankl wanted that to get through the world. So because of that, Viktor Frankl claims he survived. Postscript to the story, he almost gave up his life later on in 1956. He became depressed. But if you Google this Lubavitcher Rebbe and Viktor Frankl, Lubavitcher Rebbe, somehow Ruach HaKodesh knew that Viktor Frankl was suffering, sent an emissary to his home with the following message: don't give up on your life's work. Viktor Frankl heard this, that somebody random came out of nowhere to say don't give up on your life's work, because he was getting mocked because everybody was Freudian at the time. Viktor Frankl kept going. He got out of his depression. What got him out of his depression? When he recognized there was a reason for his existence. When he understood there was meaning. The way we get through our Yisurin, the way we develop and get through our Tzaras, is when we recognize that there's a reason for our suffering, and that there's a meaning behind it, to come to a place of introspection that we could once again reconnect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so nice, because he gives us a little gentle reminder. First, he tells us, I'm going to put a tzaras on your home. And if that doesn't work, he puts tzaras on our clothing. And if only that doesn't work, he puts tzaras on us. But it takes a little bit of time. And we have to wake up and hear the messages. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the suffering, not for us to suffer, because he wants to hear our voice, he wants to hear our cry, he wants us once again to reconnect with him. So if we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the greatest thing we could do with our tzaras. So when we just read the first pasuk in this week's parasha of Tazria, that's a rebirth, that's a seed that's being formed. Somebody once told me that the name of a Hebrew where they give birth is called a mashbir. A birthing stool is a mashbir. Why is it called a mashbir? Broken? Because the place where you're giving birth is the place which is broken. There's labor pains. You go through tremendous pains. But there you can see it. The second those pains are over, Baruch Hashem, a new baby boy, a new baby girl, sometimes two, sometimes three, Baruch Hashem, should be zeichet, the twins, they're born. But it's got to come through that suffering of the labor pains, because that's the way life is. Sometimes through the pains comes the greatest reward, and we just have to be able to focus our vision as to where the suffering is coming from, and then we can make great usage of the suffering to be able to once again reconnect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Have an amazing Shabbos.